It's an interesting
question. Or Crosby, Stills, Nash were a band. How about all the people that are coming out and playing songwriter nights? Are all those people that got a guitar or a keyboard and sitting there and singing their stuff they wrote, are they all singer-songwriters? I'm just curious what you think.
Yeah, when you put it that way, I would say that if I was using the term singer-songwriter, it would most often be used to apply to somebody who was doing it for their own purposes, as in they're making records of their own. They're not necessarily... A lot of people that come to Writers' Nights in Nashville are very, very good performers and guitar players and everything, but they're not doing it for that. They're trying to get their songs cut by other artists. So I think, for me,
they're
the singer-songwriter...
Who happens to be out there singing their song.
Right, but the singer-songwriter genre is the artist who is singing and writing and making records and stuff.
I think that's good. I like that.
That's what I would say.
Okay, is the CD out?
It's the one that you have in there.
It's the one I got in there.
Track number 4.
I do have a 10-song CD in there.
You have a 10-song CD in there. And if it's the wrong CD, hey, we'll just listen to track 4 of whatever's in there.
So it's 3 minutes and 30 seconds long. And
do you want me to say anything?
I want you to
it?
Set it up, please.
Okay. This is off of my last CD. And this particular CD, I did basically just guitar vocal because... I was finding that I was going to shows hearing singer-songwriters, and almost always they were performing solo, and I was falling in love with what they did, and then buying the CD and getting it home, and feeling like it was overproduced, and I wasn't feeling like I was getting what I fell in love with. And I realized that I, too, was overproducing, maybe not over, but I was producing these things that people weren't hearing.
It's kind of fun to do that.
Yeah,
it?
I don't tour. It is so fun to get in the studio and add
it's
players.
It's like go crazy.
But so anyway, that was how I decided to make this CD very stripped down like this. And this particular song was written to be in a documentary. I was asked to write songs for a documentary about Katrina. The documentary was never made. But I got several good songs out of it, and this is one of them. I watched a lot of footage of the devastation.
And what's it called?
It's called One More Safe Night.
All right, One More Safe Night.
I chose the color of this room to match the comfort of this feeling. We chose this pillow and this chair where we fit warm and tight and watch the firelight dance on the ceiling. This is our nest where our cares come to rest and our hearts pad round barefoot inside of our chest. Nothing can touch us but soft morning light through the breakfast time window after one more safe night. One more safe night. Our story lives in all these things, these tokens of our common memory. There's comfort in our souvenirs, faces in frames with smiles that don't change. Bless all that we do here. This is our nest where our cares come to rest and our hearts pad round barefoot inside of our chest. Nothing can touch us but soft morning light through the breakfast time window after one more safe night. One more safe night. Down to sleep, pray the Lord our home you keep for one more safe night. One more safe night. One more safe night.
Kathy Hussey, what CD is this on?
That was on Natural Habitat.
Which came out?
2009. That's my most recent.
Most recent one. What I'd like you to do, Kathy, is just pretend that you're on stage somewhere and you're just, you know, you've been given the stage to do, you know, four songs.
Oh, yeah?
And just pretend, you know, like you're in such a room doing such a thing.
Okay.
Because you are. And I'm going to shut up and just turn it over to you and do as much as you want by way of introducing the songs, like where they came from, inspiration, title, blah, you know, whatever you want to say to set it up, and then do that four times.
Okay, and I pushed the mic away, so when I'm speaking, I hope you guys can still hear me. I chose this song because we talked about how much I moved. That one thing alone in my life has informed so much of what I write about and the way that I write. And one of the things that it took me years to outgrow, I guess you could say, was the my really, really well-developed ability to leave people behind and forget they ever existed, because I had to. It was a defense mechanism. But by the time I was old enough to have romantic relationships, that ability turned out to be a way to break hearts more than anything. So this is a song that I wrote kind of by way of apology to anybody whose heart I broke.
to look straight at the sun. I couldn't see the hurt in your eyes, out of sight, out of mind, out of sight.
For applauding, I was worried about, you know, pretending I was on stage and having the audience be non-reactive. So, I mean, it's not going to be too hard to stay with the theme of places and moving around, so I'll just stick with that. This one is in standard tuning.
What was the other one in?
Just drop D.
Okay.
The song, the One More Safe Night, that we played off of the CD was in a crazy open C tuning, which is why I wanted to play the CD version, because I rarely get to play it on stage. It's too hard to get into and out of that tuning. So, So this is a song about the great state of Texas, where I lived for a good chunk of my life and had many of my formative experiences. And when I started going back to the Kerrville Folk Festival, I started to realize how much I really, truly loved the place, and that's where this song came from.
Texas left me years after I had gone, packed up my memories, snuck off somewhere, and I guess it left a hole that was filled by the song I just heard Jerry Jeff sing. It put me right there. And Lord, it's been a long, long time since I cried my heart out in three-quarter time. So I'm not gonna latch my window. Drinking warm Lone Star beer, dancing the night away. He held me till the band finished Good Night Irene. But Houston's much more than mere miles from here. He hasn't crossed my mind for years, and I thought that I'd find myself singing faded love now and then. That's just Texas creeping back in. So I'm not gonna latch my window, and I'll throw wide the door, 'cause all these feelings come around again. Well, that's just Texas creeping back in. That's just Texas creeping back in. Oh, 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 Texas.
Thank you, Ty. Thank you so much.
Sure.
You're the one guy I'm playing to in the room. Remember I told you.
You're playing to millions.
I always have that one guy in the room.
There's millions of people listening now.
So I thought I might do
something. You're gonna adjust your mic.
Okay.
I think.
Am I too loud?
Well, it's like your voice is not quite loud enough and your guitar is a little bit too loud. But.
Yeah, she's a big one, this one. This is a Yamaha that I got after that first three-quarter size gut string that I started with. This was the first steel string guitar that I got.
Ah.
I bought it at the music store that the aforementioned teacher who used to, you know, drop the needle on the record and teach me how. I bought this at that store. So this guitar has been with me a long time.
A Yamaha?
Yeah.
Yamaha?
Mm-hmm. Yamaha. And she's a good one. So I'm going to do a song that isn't on any of my recordings just for fun, because why not? And this is about, this song's about inevitability and perception. And I wrote it right after, the summer after the big flood.
Title?
The title is Come a Rain.
It will blow in from a direction. It will happen on a day of the week. It will come through while we're working. It will wait till we're asleep. It will scour every surface. It will cause something to rust. It will find the lowest purchase. It will settle this dust. But oh, it will come. Come rain. Come rain, fall down. Come rain, fall down on this ground. It will batter every rooftop. It will find its way through some. It will crush this morning's flower. It will help a new one come. It will make somebody hurry. It will undo someone's plan. It will cause a mom to worry. It will fortify this land. But oh, it will come. Come rain. Just enough for one, too little for another, too much. Sometimes it starves, sometimes it feeds, while some rejoice and others grieve. But come it will, come rain, fall down, come rain, fall down on this ground, come rain.
So I think I will do this song, this Mary song. Are we going to have other live performances, or are we...
I think this is probably the... You could do two more if you wanted. It depends on whether you want to talk, how much more talking you want to do. Or how much more talking the audience want to hear. But it's kind of like...
It's hard to judge
that. It's
all
good,
time.
Yeah.
Wait, how do you guys feel?
If you want to do more... if you want to do two, do two. But definitely do one more.
Let's
going into D?
I'm going into Dadgad.
Dadgad?
It's a familiar and favorite place, Dadgad. A lot of the songs on Moments of Wonder were in Dadgad, because I discovered Dadgad just a couple years before making that record, and I just wrote a flurry.
Did you tune your G to F sharp?
Nope.
For that?
The affectionately known Dad Fashad.
Mm.
No, I go Dadgad.
That's right.
Dad Fashad.
Yeah.
All right, so this is the song called The Same Mary. This is the song that has done just really well in song contests. It won the Great American Song Contest. It was featured in American Songwriter magazine. It was on a compilation of songs that was used to raise money for an organization for elder rights. And I should have looked up the name of the CD and the organization before I left the house, and I've forgotten. I'm sorry, but that was a great honor. So this is called The Same Mary. It's in the voice of this older woman. I'm over here in the corner, yet another family affair. It's strange to be the old relic propped in this rocking chair. The kids are all frightened of me. They only come with mom's hand at their back. Well, that's okay. There's no way that they could know that. I'm the same Mary who once was her daddy's little girl. I'm the same Mary, the pillow fight champion of the world, catcher of lightning bugs, bullfrogs, garden slugs, climber of sky tall trees. I'm the same Mary. Voices at me, so I'm sure to hear what they say. And usually it's some pearl of wisdom like, are you feeling okay? Young men rush to my rescue when I show signs of wanting to stand. Well, I don't need it yet, but I accept. They don't understand that I'm the same Mary. Dance till they threw us out at dawn. I'm the same Mary who played tackle football on the front lawn. Fixer of broken joys, mother of four strong boys, coach and referee. I'm the same Mary. But then he comes in the room, not just a tired old man, but the love of my life. And I'm saved by his wink at my cranky ways, 'cause I know that talk.
Alright.
I had some questions that
should I leave this microphone where it is, do you think?
Yeah, that mic's good there. Well, just talking about St. Mary, what was that you're doing exactly up there high on the neck, 9, 10, 11? Are those chords that you're kind of like, what is that you're doing exactly?
Okay, this is really cool. This isn't the first time that I have written a whole song around a lick.
And you had the lick first?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You just found it noodling around one day? Mm-hmm.
And basically, so I'm capoed on the third fret. I'm in dadgad. And I am hammering on, I don't know how to really describe this.
Yeah, are those chords, notes. Though, that
well,
you're...
Well, not exactly. I'm hitting the top three strings, and I'm fingering the top, the E and the G. And then, well, I wish I could describe this
to
you.
Yeah, it's kind of like trying to tell somebody to tie your shoes.
But if I slow it down... It's a hammer-on.
Yeah.
A repeated pattern of.
Does that kind of thing show up in a lot of your music?
Yes.
It's like a signature, it's like a trademark Kathy Hussey thing.
Yeah, I guess it kind of is, yeah. And
it kind of washes over you.
In this song, I think it works really well as almost like a cinematic device. Because when she's singing, I'm the same Mary, she's reverting back to, you know, being this person she's always been. And it's like a dream sequence almost.
Yeah.
And so I keep all of the work tapes that I've ever done. And I started with digital a long, long time ago. So I have all these great digital files that I've annotated. And I have all the recordings of me finding this lick and turning it into this song.
Was it difficult to play at first?
Yes, and what'll happen is I'll do something by accident and then work for an hour to try to get it back and master it. And that's exactly what happened with this lick. You know, I did something.
So you had the recorder on.
And I had the recorder on, and I knew what I'd done. And interestingly, my husband, the aforementioned Bob Mader, who is a drummer, was on the road with somebody, I don't know who, and he called in the middle of this tape, and I didn't turn it off. And you can hear me on the tape saying to him, "You've got to hear this. This is the coolest lick I've ever written."
Yeah.
So it's fun to have that record of. And then my friend, another friend of mine, called in the middle of this process to tell me about. She had two parents with Alzheimer's. One had moved in with her and passed away, and now the other one was moving in with her, and she was talking about how this time they were going to bounce, I think it was her father, around between the various siblings so that nobody, you know, had to have the responsibility all the time. And that made me put myself in the position of the person who was being bounced around.
Mm.
Not that I think that they shouldn't do that. Obviously, you know, you have to do what you have to do. But that's where this idea about the Mary's voice came, because I had this conversation after having written this lick. And I just knew that it all went together in that moment. So that's where the song came from.
You ever think about getting that song to Kathy Mattea?
It's been pitched. I'll tell you the problems with this song. This song is actually the perfect example of why I have trouble getting songs cut. And that is, it's a great song. It really is. It affects people. People always come up after shows and say, "Wow, I had a grandma," or, you know,
absolutely.
Some, they relate. And it's a good song.
Yeah.
The problem is that there aren't any female artists who are willing to sing in that voice, or very few.
Kathy, you know, she had that big hit with that John, her husband, wrote with, about the...
Well, where have you been?
Yeah.
Not that, right, but that's a little different.
It's a little different.
It's third person.
But I could hear her singing that.
I know, totally. I agree with you. There's so many people that I've said that about. And I've had publishers say... you just need to switch it into third person, and then it'll, you know, we can pitch it. And I said, no, it doesn't work in third person. She's the same Mary.
Yeah.
There's no emotional immediacy.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's kind of the problem with the song, but it has a home somewhere, and it has certainly made its way out into the world in a lot of different ways.
Yeah. The first song you did reminded me of, it seemed like it was kind of soul or R&B, and like, the Alabama Shakes, you know, are doing some stuff that's similar.
Yeah,
I mean, in style or whatever. But have you thought? Did you agree with that?
Definitely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. The out of sight, out of mind.
Very cool. Let me ask you a question. Do you think a song needs to be easily understandable, as direct and easy to follow as a personal letter for lack of being more eloquent.
I never would have thought to compare it to a personal letter, but absolutely 100%. I think it needs to be direct and easy to understand.
Okay.
Absolutely.
So the main point and the main meaning needs to be pretty, you know,
yes.
Needs to come across pretty powerfully.
Yeah,
to where
and
the
I even,
person like, oh, I get exactly.
Yeah, when I'm teaching workshops, and not just to kids, I mean, when I'm teaching adult songwriting workshops, one of the things that I really focus on is, one is writing to the title, but the other is having a mission statement for your song. Hmm. So not only are you, and it also helps to have the chorus written first. I know a lot of people are going to disagree with me, and that's perfectly fine. They can write their songs how they'd like, but to have that constant reminder of what your focus is. It helps to have the chorus written first. Definitely got to have the title. If you've written the chorus, you have the title. But this mission statement idea, it basically, I have my students try to write in one sentence what they are trying to communicate with the song. And it's a prose sentence, and it doesn't have to make a ton of sense or anything. It's just something that they can continue to look back at and make sure that every line they write addresses their mission statement. And it keeps it focused and it keeps it making sense.
Do you need to know the beginning, middle, and end of the song before you write it?
If it's a story song, you do, mm-hmm. I think.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, if it's a story song, once I've written a chorus and I know what my mission statement is, I don't tend to write my mission statement down, but that's just because of the way I write. I know what my mission statement is. But I will outline verses. I'll write, you know, a one, a two, and a three, and have a little brief statement about what content is going to be in those verses. And how, one of my favorite things about writing songs is taking the chorus, which is so predictable and repetitive, and making it mean something new every time. So what you say in the verses and how you lead up to the chorus can change or shade the meaning of that chorus. I love that. That's my favorite, I want to say toy. It's probably more like a tool, but it's my favorite thing
Pat
to do.
Pat Pattison talks about that.
Does he?
And he talks about like having these boxes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and just to simplify it, and each box is like, box two is bigger than box one, and box three is bigger than box two.
Mm-hmm.
And then in box one, Sheriff John is the meanest, toughest sheriff in Texas.
Uh-huh.
Verse two, box two, the meanest, toughest sheriff in Texas loves Mary,
uh-huh.
the prettiest
uh-huh.
school marm in Texas. And then verse three, box three, Mary loves Floyd, the coward of the county, or something. And then, so each time the chorus, like you were saying, mm-hmm. is supposed to mean something different.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm with Mr. Pattison.
Yeah,
on that.
Yeah.
Totally.
Detail. There's lots and lots of detail.
Yeah.
So that's obviously something you feel is an important integral part of writing a strong song.
Absolutely. You have such a short amount of time to convey anything at all in a song, and so every word carries a lot of weight, and so it might as well be a descriptive one.
It's a lot of adjectives.
I don't know that I've ever thought of it that way. I wouldn't choose an adjective over a noun if the noun worked better.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure.
Do you have to restrain yourself at all? Is there such a thing as too much?
Yeah, but that's the part, you know, that all happens at the beginning, hopefully. You
mm-hmm.
know, hopefully you're writing way too much at first.
And you whittle it.
And then whittling it down and really kind of almost distilling it down. Or what do you do in cooking with a sauce? You're reducing it.
Yeah.
You know, you're letting all of the stuff that you don't need steam away.
Boiling down to the essence.
Uh-huh, exactly.
To where nothing's left.
That's how I view it, for sure. And I like to take, I like to avoid cliche at all costs. I really, really hate cliche, but I'll put a cliche in a lyric right at first to not get stuck, if I'm in kind of a, you know, if I'm really flowing
just
well.
Just to fill it in. And then rewrite it.
And then go back and turn that cliche on its head in some way.
Can you think of an example?
Yeah. I have a song called, Sunset on the Lagaritas, and, It's on Moments of Wonder. It's I'm describing. So, okay, I'm going to build a house at the high end of this valley. Nothing too grand, but this great big view. And this upcoming line is where I twisted it around. All I really need is a porch that wraps around the end of every day. This old guitar and you. And it was, and at first, you know, obviously a porch that wraps around the end of, I just left that trailing as I was writing it. It wraps around the end of the house. It wraps around the end of the canyon. It wraps around the end of, you know, and I was thinking very literally until I remembered that I was writing a song about the sun setting. And so I said it wraps around the end of every day, which I think was such a cool stroke. I love that line. We haven't heard sunset yet. That's in the first verse. We don't know yet. It's just leading you towards it.
You know who had a big hit with a cliche was Randy Travis with that On the Other Hand song. You familiar with that?
Yeah. There's been tons of hit songs with cliches.
Yeah.
Kind of making them cliches.
Somebody suggested having a cliche as a title.
Yeah. But, and working it.
Yeah. Yeah. Putting a different twist on it.
Or idioms. You know?
Yeah.
You can definitely take idiom. That's a very commercial country kind of technique.
Yeah.
You know, I've got a thinking problem.
Uh-huh.
Those kinds of things where you take the cliche and just twist it around a little bit.
Is it difficult to avoid repeating yourself?
And
I'm thinking more in terms of chord progressions.
Yeah. Well, I'm terrified of repeating myself. So you're going to find, I think, when you listen to my records, that nothing sounds like anything else. So, you know, you caught me out there because I refuse to sound like myself, or at least I try.
How do you avoid it successfully?
This could very well be why I haven't written in a while, because it's pretty difficult after you've written a whole bunch of songs.
I would think the more you write, the harder it's going
to
become.
But it brings us back to the covers thing.
Yeah.
If you start taking yourself out of your box and learning some songs, maybe songs that you never would have thought you wanted to learn at all, that'll help me sometimes to do that. It's hard. But it's one of my basic tenets. I don't want to repeat myself if I can help it.
Has your troops sent in any questions that you want to field?
I don't know.
At
hey,
this
troops
point?
Over here on Facebook. Are you
if
guys-
not, I got. Got okay. more stuff?
Let me see. I'm
we
checking.
Got about 20 minutes.
Okay. Same Mary, yes, live. Change nothing ever. Oh, my friend W.T. Davidson. I might as well promote something really quick. Can I do that while I'm looking through this?
You certainly can.
I'm going to be playing at the Bluebird, the ever more famous Bluebird Cafe, since that Nashville show came out. With my friends, we go by the Variety Pack. So we're playing on the 7th, which is next Thursday. Two Thursdays. It's W.T. Davidson, Dan Schaefer, Whit Hill, and myself. And we go by the Variety Pack because we love playing on singing on each other's songs, but we're all very unique and different from each other. So, These are all just supportive, lovely comments. There's no questions here.
No questions.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let me.
Thanks for your supportive, lovely comments.
Yeah.
Everybody.
Thanks for listening, folks, and supporting Kathy, and checking in on the show.
Wait. Let me check in with my messages because it's bouncing in my. Lifeintheyears.org. Thank you. My husband is giving me some little tips here. That was the organization that used the same Mary as for fundraising, lifeintheyears.org. Thank you,
Bob. Okay.
Yeah, good call there.
Do you think that do you have a desire to want to change the world?
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah.
I do.
Yeah.
I feel like every song I write carries a little bit of responsibility to affect somebody. And I think that you can change the world one person at a time. Luckily, I think that because that way when somebody comes up after a show and tells me how affected they were by a song, I feel like I've really done something.
Yeah.
So, I want to change the world, and that's why I work with kids. I love to, you know, I told you that I didn't start writing songs till college, so it's important to me that I get this message across to kids that these songs are created by people, and these people are no different than you.
Mm.
And just because you're only eight, it doesn't mean you can't be making up your own songs. So I love bringing that to kids. And
do you think that music and songwriting chose you?
Yes, absolutely.
Rather than the other way around?
Absolutely. Yeah.
So does that mean that pretty much the only people doing this are the people that are kind of have a calling to do it?
Would that be fair? That's pretty broad, because I don't think that... I think some people do choose it. And I'm going to go back to the
successfully
kids again.
And be successful?
Yeah. Again, with success.
Success, well, let's define success as that, you know, strangers appreciate what you're doing.
Mm-hmm. That's a good definition. I like it. But it leaves out whether you are happy or fulfilled in any way. But I mean, for the conversation we're having, obviously that's a good definition.
Yeah.
So can somebody
The heart of my question is being a great songwriter, is it something you're born with? And either you got it or you don't, kind of thing. Like being a great athlete or... I don't know, whatever you
want to
fill in the blank.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say that the people that really, really have the ability to affect other people...
They've been blessed.
They have been blessed. Yeah. And it's not something you can necessarily teach. You can teach someone to write a song.
Mm-hmm.
You can teach someone to write a good song using a formula.
Right.
But to get into people's heads and make them feel a certain way, that's a gift.
Yeah.
I think it is.
Do you have any idea where your ideas come from?
No. I wish I did. Because when they don't come... I mean, I've told you several times that I really have been in a dry spell lately. And I just feel like I don't have anything to say. And there are some times when everything seems like something to say.
Yeah.
And there are other times where... nothing seems like something to say. Like, the world doesn't need me to say this right now, so I'm not going to write it.
Seems like in Nashville, it's hard to have a conversation with somebody without somebody going,
oh, there's a song.
I know,
and it's kind of inspiring and fun. I love that.
I mean,
realize it's cliche.
You're probably right, you know?
But, I mean, we have to do it. We have to write that stuff down. Even if I don't feel like something that I've just heard is something that has to be said, I will write it down.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, we all have these long lists of things that we've written down, and I'll go back to them, and different ones will inspire me on different days, and, you know.
Be thinking about what our last song is going to be.
I already know.
Okay.
I do know.
What makes a melody great?
It has to be, and I think different people have different definitions, but I think if we're talking about the kinds of melodies that, like hooky pop melodies, they have to be kind of predictable, but kind of fresh at the same time.
Something you can teach?
I don't think so, because I don't think I'm very good at it, to be perfectly honest. I have some friends that are writers that are just ridiculously good at it. And I envy that. And also those songs, it'll be the first track, those same songs that have those great hooky poppy melodies, if you can put a really great harmony to it and make people want to sing along, I think that's what makes a great melody, if we're talking about pop, you know, if we're talking about country or pop. But for me, in my writing, what makes a great melody is something that moves me while I'm singing it and is also very unpredictable. I sometimes have trouble bringing it back around to... I lean towards fresh more than I lean towards predictable, which, you know, may not... maybe another reason that people don't jump all over cutting my songs. I don't know. I love singing them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I think all of our ears are different in terms of what makes a good melody. But the ones that stick with you, you know, the poppy ones are the, I wish I had a, wouldn't it be nice if there was some kind of program that would spit out, you know, like the perfect sequence of notes for your chorus?
Have you ever heard of the hum test or the whistle test?
Kind of. Tell me more.
Well, that, you know, a great melody should be something you can hum or whistle.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. My dad always used to say... Yeah, I do. My dad always used to say, whenever there was some, you know, like, ridiculously heavy rock song on, he'd say, well, it's pretty good, but it's a little hard to hum along with. So I guess he prescribed to the hum test.
Do you think that people are writing standards anymore? You know, like, you know, out of the 20s, 30s, 40s, maybe 50s, mm-hmm. you know, people would craft these songs. And a lot of times it was a team where you had one mm-hmm. person that did the music and one person that did the lyric, and they somehow would get these marvelous, amazing songs that we're still singing today,
mm-hmm.
and because they're a standard and they're a classic and all of that sort of thing. You think those kinds of songs are still being written to where 50 years from now those songs are going
to
be...
I would love to project 50 years into the future and see which ones did hang around, because I don't know which ones those would be.
Does it seem like it's dropped off?
Maybe. But would they have known in the 30s which of those songs were going to be as tenacious as they have been? I don't know. And what makes those standards? What makes the songs that have gone on from that time stick? I mean, they're still being performed by big bands and at weddings.
Or what's her name? Ravi Shankar's daughter. Nora Jones.
Nora Jones.
She did the Nearness of You, for example.
Right.
That song's been around.
Some of her songs on that first record might be considered standards, but then I'm still defining them by sort of that genre, rather than
mm-hmm.
pulling something from what's really current right now.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what that would be. I really don't.
You know, some of those people from that era say that the melodies today aren't as great as they used to be, and that the craft has denigrated.
Mm-hmm.
I just wonder if you had any thoughts on that.
Yeah,
on
I don't.
All that.
I don't. Quite
and the whole
know what to
lowest
say.
Common denominator. There's a book out there by Michael Kosser called 50 Rows of Music Row History, or 50 Years of Music Row History, and it's talking about. He makes a distinction between like a writer like Guy Clark, mm-hmm. who he would call an art songwriter,
mm-hmm.
versus somebody writing, you know, some other types of songs, and this whole lowest common denominator thing,
yeah.
you know, and he's kind of like taking a position about, you know, his opinions are creeping in there, and it's kind of saying, you know, when you're writing for the lowest common denominator, you're not going to get a strong, or you know, I don't know what I mean. You know where I'm going?
I do, and what I'm sitting here thinking is that I wasn't even factoring in commercial songs when you asked me that question, because I don't think anything's coming out of the lowest common denominator type of songs. But there's a huge pool of incredibly talented songwriters and wonderful songs out there in a lot of different genres.
I'm hearing them at Writers' Nights.
At Writers' Nights, exactly.
That,
I hear them every Sunday night.
It's better than the stuff...
Right. And the problem is... So this is a really complex question. The problem is, are those songs that have a chance to be that good, are they ever going to see enough of a light of day that they could become standards? Or are we stuck with these songs that are on commercial radio that are probably not good enough? My apologies to all the writers who are working hard and getting these cuts. I'm not denigrating what you do. I'm really not. But what we're looking at is kind of two different things.
Yeah.
You're writing songs for a specific purpose, which doesn't seem to be like advancing music,
yeah, in the
or
evolutionary
creating new
thing or whatever.
Things.
Yeah.
The people that are creating new things and exciting things aren't getting anywhere near radio,
yeah,
except on your show.
Thank you. Yeah, we were talking about the Paul Zolo book, mm-hmm. Songwriters on Songwriting, and he goes around and interviews all different kinds of songwriters, and some of them are, you know, the folks that have been around a long time and their perspectives on songwriting and how you write and how you rhyme and.
Mm-hmm.
Is it okay to use a rhyming dictionary?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Have you ever talked to a writer that says absolutely not?
Yeah, I've heard people say that. I don't get it.
I don't see
why you wouldn't use every tool at your disposal.
Well, to me, it implies that if I had that the capability to memorize all that stuff, then it would be okay.
Right.
Which doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. No, I don't really get it. I mean, why would you turn your back on this tool? All these words are laying there on the page.
I guess they're saying that. Maybe
I try first, but it's a long time before I pick up a rhyming dictionary. I have to be pretty stuck.
Somebody said, I've been trying to find these cool quotes, and somebody, I can't remember who said it, but it was an author rather than a songwriter that said, if you have to go to thesaurus, it's the wrong word.
I might agree with.
That was a successful writer. I don't know. I'm not sure. It's interesting.
I do go to thesaurus.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if I agree with it, but I do know that thesauri can be that's dangerous, because you can end up picking words that are just sort of ridiculous and thinking you're a genius and really just sounding pompous.
Do you have favorite keys?
Yeah, oddly enough, A flat. I tend to write in A flat a lot. I'm sure it's a vocal range thing. I definitely have a problem with writing melodies that sound great in my head that I can't actually sing. Which is kind of an interesting issue, and I'll just go ahead and write it.
Get a baritone guitar.
Yeah, we talked about that last night, actually.
I don't remember that.
No, not we. Sorry, at my writer's night after the show, we were talking about how
there's a lot.
Rather
of
than capoing up on the ninth fret to achieve something, you can just have a baritone.
It's a cool thing. It's a very cool thing.
My friend John Stecker has a baritone guitar. I'm name dropping all night long. Are you guys listening?
You think each key has its own character?
Yeah. I do know that you can completely change the way a song feels and the way the melody lays by changing the key, even if you're singing the exact same melody over the same, numerically the same chord.
Have you ever realized you've been singing a song a half a step off and you didn't realize it until you've been performing it for a year?
Yeah.
And then suddenly you like try it on a different position, you go... this is where it needed to be the whole time, and for some reason
and oddly enough, I will go through all sorts of gyrations when I'm first writing it, moving the capo around, trying to figure out exactly where it feels best, and I know that is where it's best at that moment, but it can change. There's a song that that I wrote, I think, on the fourth fret that I now do on the seventh fret.
Does it need to be, like some people describe it, as that sweet spot in your voice, or the idea that it needs to be as high as you can without straining, because the higher you go without straining, there's more like emotional intensity.
I think that's that a case-by-case basis. Both of those things are true for me. I definitely have a sweet spot in my voice. And then I just write things from that spot that are too high and too low. So I do have to find a nice key so that I'm not putting myself completely out of the picture.
Trained as a vocalist?
No. I've taken vocal classes and things like that, but not particularly.
You got a thought about that? Is that a voice
lesson?
Whether
it's important?
Yeah, voice.
I think it's very important. I think it can't hurt. I think lessons of any kind, as often as possible, are a great idea. On guitar, on vocals, there's no particular reason that I haven't really taken voice lessons. Other than I just always want to focus on my guitar for some reason. I just signed up for a year of online guitar lessons.
Oh, the bluegrass thing?
I can't remember what the website is. It was a Groupon or a something, Amazon Local, and I went to the website and they just have video after video after video. I'm very, very excited about it. I can't wait to learn some new stuff.
Sounds like the bluegrass.
I don't
Academy
remember it being
or is Academy
bluegrass.
Of bluegrass or something.
It wasn't bluegrass specific.
Okay.
I wish I could remember. Bob is saying, play the song. What song?
Do you ever feel like your guitar... Let me see. How do I want to say this? Do you ever feel like your voice is accompanying your guitar more than the other way around?
Yeah, particularly on some songs, yeah. There are some songs where the guitar part is really the most important thing to me. And then the lyrics, and then the melody. But that shifts around. Some songs... the melody that I'm singing is far more important, and I'm maybe just doing a simple strumming thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you say you've been self-taught on all your guitar? You could just had a good ear, and you could kind of figure stuff out by listening?
For the most part, that's true, yeah. The initial lessons that I had on classical, after that it was all self-taught, yeah. I would basically what I would do is the process of learning songs off of records. I decided that no matter how hard something sounded, I was going to learn how to play that song, no matter how many times I had to try or play it, and I always managed to do it. And so that was my keeping the bar set high enough that I was learning and not resting on what I already knew.
Yeah. How important is it as a songwriter to know music theory?
Good question. See, again, do as I say, not as I do. I could read music if I was forced to, but I don't read music. It's so much quicker for somebody to play something for me and I can play it back rather than try to read a piece of music. So I am not...
Are you thinking in terms of the Nashville number system?
No.
Like I just went to the
no.
two minor...
Nope.
Blah, blah, blah.
Luckily for me, I'm married to a guy who thinks in the Nashville number system. Mm-hmm. And so when I need assistance in that department, I have it. Mm. So, but I think if I had it to do over again, I would be better at reading music and I'd be more well-versed in that.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's a tool. It's something to have in your back pocket. And I'm sure there are things that I have turned down or I know that it has been an issue for me. Yeah, like in terms of teaching certain classes, I've had to turn things down because I knew that the theory that would be required would be more than I felt like I could teach anybody. Mm. So yeah, it's important.
We're almost out of time, but we have time for you to introduce this last song.
Okay.
We're
going
to listen
this
to.
It's kind of the title track of Moments of Wonder. The song is not called Moments of Wonder, but that phrase appears in it. The song is called We Are the Day. It's on Moments of Wonder, features on background vocals Dan Schaefer and Molly Garrigan, some good friends of mine, great, great, great singers, and my husband Bob. He played... He sang on this as well, which he doesn't usually do. He played drums. He produced this record. It's a very bluegrass-influenced thing that I'm just real fond of. And it's the first song on the album. Byron House is playing bass on it. He's a good friend. Brian Sutton. Anyway, it's called We Are the Day, and thank you so very much.
Kathy Hussey, thank you so much for coming on my show, and congratulations on all your success, and as they say, for all you do for the songwriters here in town, and pleasure to have you on the show, and
thanks,
be seeing you
around.
Thanks
for doing this.
You bet.
Yeah.